DW, the 77%.
Time don't come, my people. Now you ready to ride?
It's the show that gives you, the African youth, a chance to be part of the debate shaping Africa. Hello and welcome to the 77%. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. On this week's show, we are looking at stereotypes in conflict. We'll hear from a frustrated young Fulani in Nigeria telling their own story.
My problem is, I was born here, but we are not given equal rights. They don't want to see me on this land, and the government is doing nothing about it.
We will also be discussing the issue of stereotypes, and you can be a part of this debate by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa. So stay tuned for more. Fulani cattle herders have been in the media a lot lately. They have always faced a lot of challenges. Many young people are not able to continue or even begin much more than a basic education because they are expected to take care of their animals from a relatively young age.
Now, many of them have also been accused of being terrorists after disputes between Fulanis and settled communities across West Africa. Catherine Gessler went to Jos in Plateau State to find out more. Her report is presented by Emma Wallis.
This looks like a tough job for these two boys. Neither of them is older than 16, but together they take care of more than 20 cows. Every day they are responsible for making sure the cattle get enough grass and water here in Plateau State in central Nigeria, a region that is also called the Middle Belt. Idris Abdullahi Bayero is watching them.
Well, my name is Idris Abdullahi Bayero. I am a Fulani man. I am a graduate of history and international studies.
Years ago, the 29-year-old who studied at the University of Jos was just like these two boys. He lived with his family in the bush and moved around with cows, calves and goats. Even now that he lives away, he enjoys going back to the countryside to get in touch with the rural communities in which he grew up.
Yeah, well, to me, I look at it as a dual experience. Experience of the rural life, the bush life, and experience of the urban life. Actually, me, I'm a person of change. I believe in change. I believe in modernization. You understand? So I want these people, my people that are there in the rural settlement, should be also modernized, should also be educated.
Education is one of the main challenges facing these communities. Traditionally, the Fulanis are nomads moving across Western and Central Africa. Though most communities now live in more permanent settlements, these are still often far away from schools or other facilities like healthcare centres. Idris thinks he's lucky. When he was a child, members of the community supported him to go to school. To continue to university, he had to use his own cows. Cows are not only the Fulani's pride and joy, they're also their bank.
Well, actually, this is the cow that I have. I sold a lot of them. Anytime I want to pay school fees, I'll go to the village, I'll go to the bush and catch one of them, take it to the market and sell it. We have the cattle market in Bukuru, we have in Jos here. That's how I pay my school fees. Yeah. Even though I don't want it to be like that. How I wish I would have get something where I can get income and leave my cattle to keep, propagating.
Life has not been so easy for 20-year-old Mariam Mohammed. She was only able to attend school for a short while before she became the mother of two small children. She lives in a small settlement an hour's drive away from Jos.
My problem is, I was born here, but we are not given equal rights. They don't want to see me on this land, and the government is doing nothing about it. The government is supposed to look into this problem and treat us as equals, just like any other person born here. But we are not treated equally. They don't want us on this land. I was born here, but I don't know why they don't want me to be here.
The young woman is angry. Angry about the lack of infrastructure, which has long been an issue, but also about the negative image the Fulanis seem to have acquired. Farmers have always mocked the Fulani because of their way of life and their enthusiasm for cows. But in the last couple of weeks, the slurs against the herders have become much stronger. Fulani terrorists are words found in many Nigerian newspapers. The Voice, a daily in Benue State, writes, for instance,
armed Fulani militia last Wednesday killed three persons in Gweri local government area of Benue State.
The term is also often used in talk shows like Sunrise Daily, which is broadcast by Channels TV.
Welcome back. Now, Mr. Naji, what is the import of declaring these herdsmen terrorists? What effect will that have on this matter?
Since the beginning of 2018, an ongoing conflict has really stepped up, resulting in hundreds of deaths. These clashes started years ago, but now both groups are armed, and so the anger is spilling into killing. Most of the local media calls the Fulanis the perpetrators. Idris fears that an already unequal situation can only get worse.
This stigmatization, or the stigma itself, will actually lead to serious animosity between these two conflicting parties or groups, because Fulani will begin to look at other tribes as their enemy. They will become more radical day by day.
And that frustration at being blamed for the whole conflict could result in young Fulani becoming easy prey for bandits and actual terrorist groups, says Idris.
You see, my cow is rustled, I may be killed, or my brother has been killed, nothing is done about it. In fact, they start looking at the state as their enemy too. So from there, the terrorists will use to take advantage of that and convince them, use them.
That's an aspect a lot of people forget, especially when talking to Christians in the Middle Belt. They accuse the Fulani of spreading Islam southwards and starting a jihad against Christian communities. Still, some Christians firmly disagree. One of them is Blaise Agwam. He's a Catholic priest and head of the Dialogue, Reconciliation and Peace Centre in Jos. He's very much alarmed by the latest developments.
Because of this stigmatization, there are places where a normal Fulani youth cannot enter now, because they have been described as Fulani terrorists. But not all of them are terrorists. There are a lot of good and peace-loving Fulani people that cohabit peacefully with their local communities or neighbours.
Father Blaise organises meetings and workshops for young people from different faiths and ethnic groups and is sure a peaceful life together is still possible. However, he has one piece of advice for young Fulani.
I feel one of the ways is for the young Fulani generation to also get friendly towards the media. They need to tell their own story. As I said, unless you tell your story, nobody will tell it for you. So they need to rescue themselves by using the media to change the narratives.
That's exactly Idris's goal. After graduating from university, he's still looking for a job. Meanwhile, he walks around in Jos and tries to convince as many people as possible to join him in opening up about the Fulani way of life. The stigmatization of young Fulani doesn't help anybody, he thinks, and his dream is to use education as a route out of these problems, just as it was for him.
Like me now, I have this dream, I have this campaign. My own priority is how can I take education to the doorstep of my people? Because they are the most backward, they are the abandoned people, they are the most isolated people. Government doesn't care about them. Since government doesn't care about them, they don't talk, they don't have people to talk on their behalf. Now I'm their representative. I will be talking on their behalf.
Idris Abdullahi Bayero, a Fulani man, ending that report by Catherine Gensler.
It's time for a debate.
And for the debate today, we are joined by my colleague Abu Bakar Jallo. Abu, it's great to have you on board.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Now, we've just had a report about young Fulani who are frustrated and also stigmatized because of the lack of infrastructure and the fact that they are mocked because of their way of life. Why has this issue become particularly fraught, especially now?
It's interesting that such an issue is being discussed at this particular time now, because we saw a number of clashes not just happening in Nigeria, according to that report. We've seen the same thing in Ghana, in Mali, between the Gordons and the Fulanis there as well. And also in the Central African Republic, between the Fulanis and different ethnic groups there. It's quite a contentious issue. across West Africa into Central Africa. It's been going on for quite a while now, because sometimes someone asks me, can this conflict, can it be compared to the persecution of Jews in Europe before Second World War? And my response was, not to that extent, but that's the direction that this is heading, because the Fulanis are being persecuted across West Africa. It is a fact. And there are so many stereotypes, and as an African, you also, I think you can attest to that. There are so many stereotypes across
yes,
Africa.
Definitely.
And Fulanis are basically being branded in so many stereotypes, and they're feeding into these stereotypes.
And Abu, do you think the media, to some extent, has fueled the negative image that Fulani have acquired?
Largely, because you can't call an ethnic group a terrorist, a whole group of people a terrorist. And these aren't just people in Nigeria. These are people. Originally, Fulanis come from Ethiopia. They migrated. There was a mass migration because of some political issues there as well in the 1800s. And they migrated. That's why you find Fulanis across Central Africa, because this is the region they came through all the way to West Africa and down towards Nigeria and even Cameroon. Part of that, and come, say, you know, Liberia, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Sierra Leone, and all those countries. You can't have a media that is supposed to represent minorities, group of people, and they are already referring to a certain group of people, terrorists, even though they've not been officially been branded terrorists by any other group. Of course, you do have bandits, people who basically, there are those Fulanis who are armed. They armed because they guard their cows and their communities, and they protect them because you, I don't know, quite recently we reported about a group of bandits who go to villages and ransacked those villages in Nigeria. And then they get you know, livestock, properties, money, and even kidnap people. And the Fulanis also protect themselves and also attack when they get attacked. They attack people who attack them. This is a situation that is going on. That is the reality. But, you know, most of them are being branded bandits by the media in Nigeria.
Now, we asked a question on our Facebook page on whether this apportioning of blame, like calling now Fulani terrorist, is a form of stereotype. And how can we fight this? There were different reactions, as you would expect, but still some people kept calling the Fulani terrorists in the comments. But some say the conflict is politically motivated. Someone like Lukman Abubakar is saying the problems of farmers and herdsmen is politically motivated. Only a good and serious government can deal with it. And Abubakar Dabo is saying the politicization of the conflict by political leaders is just one example of ignorance and hysteria. He's saying we, the readers, are held hostage to atrocities perpetrated against the Fulanis by the natives in Nigeria. And it has never been this bad in the history of herders and farmers crisis. That's his comment.
Thanks so much for that, Dabo. We have this one from Sadiq Abubakar, and he says both parties are responsible for the conflict. They have failed to accept each other to live in peace and harmony. Is it true? The blame is on both sides.
Well, you can blame both sides, definitely. You can, but we're talking about Nigeria here, where there are so many ethnic groups. I would tell you, not if you ask Nigerians, a normal Nigerian, how many ethnic groups do you have in Nigeria? They don't know. They simply don't know, because there's just so many ethnic groups in Nigeria. And of course, you can blame the Fulanis for not coming out, but you also have to take into consideration of certain factors, including their tradition. They have a tradition where they are very close, they keep to themselves, and they're very, you know, they have their community, they follow their cows. And it's like this. Say you have a really rich, educated, fuller man in the city living there, living a Western lifestyle. But that person is connected back to the community where he's born, because that's just who they are. And they have a number of cows. Like in the report there, they mentioned that from the protagonist, they are saying the cows, it's his bank. And that is the reality. For every fuller man elsewhere, they have cows back there. So their money is not in the bank. Their money is on their cows. That is just their tradition. And you have to factor that and understand that if a community is coming to take their bank away, and they're going to fight back.
Now, the question comes in, is it right to put everything in one pot? I mean, we're not denying the fact that attacks have taken place. But now, people are taking the Fulani and just putting all of them in one pot. You've just talked about this Fulani man who's living the Western life, but he's seen as a Fulani still. So is it right to put this in one pot, and also bearing the fact that Nigerian president is Fulani? So people are looking at the Fulani as being part of the regime or being part of the president, and that president is backing them. Why do people do this?
It's interesting that you can't put people in one pot. That is just, it is just wrong. You can't say this, you know, men are like that, women are like that, or, you know, Germans are like that, or Nigerians are like that, or say Fulanis are like that. You just can't, because people are just different. We have, you know, different tastes, different things that we are interested in. Let's say we might have similarities as Africans, but we are different in a lot of ways, because we hear different music, we do things differently. Sure. And you just can't put people in one pot. Definitely not.
Well, it's interesting because we have this kind of stereotypes in conflict. For example, when we look at the issue of the post-election violence in Kenya, we had people from different ethnic groups who started attacking their own neighbors, or also with the xenophobic attacks in South Africa. So the question is, where does the fundamental problem lie with this issue?
I think to a larger extent, there has to be some sort of campaign that where people recognize the dignity and respect of people, irrespective of their ethnic background. You just have to know that that person is a human being as much as you are, and you are the same people because you are from the same country, kind of like that. You have to see it like that. But if you say, okay, I am Igbo, that person is Yoruba, that person is Fulani, we're not the same. No, you're all Nigerians. In the end, that's what it is. You all carry the same passport. You identify as one.
So do you think education is a key to change this kind of thinking?
Absolutely. Education is a key to actually letting people understand. And the message has to change at the core of everything. That is within the media in Nigeria. And, you know, as someone in the media business, I understand that a message like this, you know, it sells in the sense that it brings numbers to this radio station, TV station, that, you know, brand the Fulanis in Nigeria as terrorists. You know, the people who are against this, them, a lot of them listen to them. They go to their social media pages, they react to them, and that's how, you know, they make money from things like that, and also sell their image and their TV or radio stations. Things like that, they want that, but it has to change. There has to be some sort of regulations coming, maybe not from the central or the federal government, but say from the state. It has to be regulated for a solution to be found in this case.
Well, speaking of regulations, we have an example in Rwanda of the Hutus and Tutsis. I mean, referring to Hutu or Tutsi is not even approved in the country, and it is actually illegal unless it's in a historical context.
That is how, you know, the current government in Rwanda is fighting, you know, this whole thing. You know, you can't identify, in Rwanda, you can't, I say that because I've been there, you can't ask anyone, are you Hutu, are you Tutsi? They would, like, you know, shock. They would really shock. If I'm Rwandan, that's it. That's how they identify themselves as. And that's the sort of example that needs to be copied in places like Nigeria.
And Eunice Enabu, what our listener should know is that crime has no nationality, has no religion, and don't stereotype any language or ethnic group, because a criminal is a criminal.
That's a good way to end. Abu, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me here.
And that's all we had time for in this week's 77% show. You can listen to this show and previous editions by visiting dw.com/77.
Well, keep the 77% debate going by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa. Until next time, my name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Bye for now.
you go.